This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
All right, Lombardi Line. Hope you're having a great Friday. Patrick Maher live from the VSiN studios here at the South Point. Michael Lombardi there in Jersey. We're going to talk about some plays that Michael would avoid this week. He can't go for it.
Yeah.
And one of them has to do
it's
with
our segment. It's John Oates. Where is our man? He's at the abandoned luncheonette. I love him. I can't wait to see him there.
Washington, Green Bay. A play that Wes just said he's taking Washington. Open 10.
I can't go for that.
No?
I mean, look, I have no faith, zero faith in the Washington football team. I can't go for that. I mean, like, you're going to tell me that all of a sudden they're going to start playing great defense against one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game on their home field, who just beat the Bears, who's a really good defense, and beat them by 10. Now, they got some breaks in the game. I understand all that. But every time I think the Washington football team is going to do something good, and here's why I really can't go for that, because I do power rankings every week. And every week my power rankings in these games tells me I should take last week I should take Washington. Right? I was never taking Washington. Andy Reid against Ron Rivera, Andy Reid against Jack Del Rio, no chance. I can't go for that. Well, I can't do it this week either. You know, the week before they're back, they're playing New Orleans. I was all over New Orleans. All over New Orleans. There's no way I'm going Sean Payton against that. So for me, the fact that it's coming down from the number makes it happier for me.
Washington at Packers. That's a John Oates play. No can do.
I like it. No can do.
A little quiet.
I love it.
But it works.
I love it. I love it.
Let's continue. You're going to lay off the Patriots laying 7 at the Jets. Let me get the official updated number here as we take a look. It does look like we're at 7. Yeah, you can't go for it.
I can't go for that because here's why. If you go back and watch the last game, the Patriots were fortunate. I mean, Zach Wilson was throwing the ball to him. They didn't force the turnovers. Zach Wilson made the turnovers. There's two different things. And he didn't protect the football. The first interception, he's got a guy coming at him. He throws a bad ball. The second one, he underthrows a 7 cut. The guy's actually open. The third one, he throws it to McCourty in the middle of the field. Why, I don't know. But they ran for 140-some yards against the Patriots. They ran the ball effectively. They didn't have any of their receivers. They had Corey Davis, but they didn't have Mims. They didn't have Crowder. I think they'll have those guys. I think it's a closer game. I do. I think it's a much closer game than many people think it is. And I think the fact that the Patriots haven't played well defensively and they're slow defensively, it helps the Jets, who are not good offensively. And then they've got to be able to protect the passer better in New England, which they haven't done. I think 7's a long way. Now, the last time they played them down in the Meadowlands, they were a 6-point favorite, the Patriots. They were a 6-point favorite on the road. Now at home, they're just a 7-point favorite. That tells you a little bit something, right?
Yeah, tells you Pat's Jets. That's a John Oates play. No can do. Next up,
I love it.
Bengals at the Ravens. This is an interesting one. We're going to elucidate after you get through it. But the Bengals, this is one that you've been discussing. Let's get into it. You can't go for this matchup.
No, because, look, here's the reality why I can't go for it. Because when you look at the Ravens, the last two times they've played, last four times they've destroyed them. The last four times they've played them, the Bengals have only scored 34 points in those games, four games. They don't score. The last time Joe Burrow played them, he got beat 27-3. He was sacked 7 times in Baltimore. And Baltimore didn't play great on offense in that game. Lamar didn't even have any yards rushing. Now, one thing that you have going for you in this Bengal game is road underdogs between a field goal and a touchdown, 3.5 and 6.5, are 79-52-1 against the spread since 2019. Right? So people are clinging to that. I don't know if that means anything. I just know the matchup between these two teams over the last four games is not favorable. Now, overall, it's 5-5 against the spread. These two teams. You say, well, the Bengals are better this year. They're not better in the offensive line. They're not better. And Don Martindale will do a good job in terms of attacking Burrow. He sacked him 7 times the last time he played him. How many times do you think he's going to sack him this time? 7? I can't go for that, Patrick.
Yeah, that's a John Oates play right there. No can do. No can do. Okay.
And all those no can do's, to me, I think it's really important as bettors that we eliminate games. Like, I don't want to take Washington. Would I take Green Bay? No, but, you know, I lean more towards Green Bay. I lean more towards taking Baltimore. My first reaction on the Baltimore-Cincy game was to take Baltimore because I know the history of the two teams. You know, and so that was why I leaned more in that direction than ever, because I felt like, you know, it would give me an opportunity.
It streamlines your handicapping too. If you're throwing the ones that are confounding to you or just back off, it makes it a lot simpler when you look at the board. You throw three away right here with the John Oates plays, and you're ready to attack the ones that look appetizing.
Right, and you see the Patriots' injury list, their enormous injury list. You know, their corner situation is not very good, you know, and they haven't been able to get much pressure on the quarterback. And if Wilson doesn't turn the ball over in the game, it'll be a field goal game. I really think it'll be a field goal game.
You brought up,
I can't take the Patriots.
No, you can't. You brought up Wilson and obviously two rookie quarterbacks. You know, your boy Mac Jones is completing over 70% of his passes. So I would imagine those that are Patriot fans, they wouldn't put the blame on the quarterback at this point, right? There's many more issues than what's happening under center.
But I think what's happening is when you watch Mac play, I think he's gotten hit way too much this year. I think young quarterbacks who get hit and take a beating like he's taking a beating, it's hard to bounce back. It becomes an issue. His eye level comes down. Now, he'll get a chance to play a team the second time. And, you know, he'll feel more comfortable playing out there and know what they're doing. He'll have a good plan with them. He'll be playing home. But still, they have not done a good job of protecting this young man, and he's taken way too many hits.
He does seem unflappable, but you never know, right? You look at Derek, is it David? David Carr in his time in Houston, who was completely
wrecked. Carr never looked this
good. He didn't look as good as Jones. No, he wasn't as accurate.
Carr, you know, we basically have this perception that Carr looked good, but in reality, Carr never looked good. I mean, you know, we can blame it on that he got hit too much, but, you know, like I'll give you a guy who got hit too much. Okay, when Kurt Warner first started playing, Kurt Warner, when he went to Green Bay, Ron Wolf would tell you, He was so unprepared to throw the ball that they'd put him in practice and he would look like crap. And then he went to the Arena League and the World League and he kind of got himself more comfortable and he matured. And then he went to the Rams and he had this great season. Well, at the end of his career at the Rams, before they released him, he was getting hit way too much and his eye level came way down. And then he went to the Giants, his eye level was down, and he was not the same player. He was just not the same player. Okay? And so a lot of people, me included, felt, well, that's his career. But when he went to Arizona, he got more comfortable, he got healthy, and his eye level returned up. We've seen this happen. It's happened to Brady. It happens to all quarterbacks. So you can get your eye level back up if you have good eye level. And I think in Carr's case, he never really did.
Can you judge the rookie with the Jets at this point and Mr. Wilson based on just the lack of talent, the left tackle gone? Can you judge him?
I think it's hard. I think he's so inconsistent. I mean, he shows flashes of looking like he's got a chance to really be a good player. But I think the whole team, they don't have an identity of offense. I don't like their scheme on offense with Mike LaFleur. They're one of the worst teams in the league on third down. They can't, you know, they ran the ball against the Patriots, but we know that game kind of got out of hand in the fourth quarter, so the numbers can be a little bit deceiving. But to me, I don't think they have an identity on what they really want to do on third down and what they want to do as an offensive football team.
Okay. Before we get off of this, it's, you know, you're often a guest with the Junkies there in D.C. They've been on the radio for over 20 years, and they're diehard Washington football team fans. The vibe right now, and again, Washington's at Green Bay catching 8. There is a horrible stink around this team. Obviously, everything that's happening with the owner, but this is Washington right now is in a bad way.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I keep asking this question. Are we sure they're well-coached? I mean, do they look like a well-coached team to you?
They don't. They don't.
They don't look like a well-coached team at all to me. And they look like a team that, you know, talk about a team that should have drafted a quarterback, Patrick. I mean, you know, they drafted a linebacker that, you know, that hasn't really helped their team.
Well, they drafted Daniel Snyder, his son's friend, because he went to high school with his son. They drafted Haskins, and that was a disaster.
I mean, it's really bad. I mean, you know, like there's nothing about this team that I like. I mean, you know, the fact that, like, and I keep going back to what I said all offseason. If the Eagles don't go no Moss in that last week 17 game and pull Hurts, they're not going to make the playoffs. We wouldn't be having this conversation about them being a playoff team. It was the no Moss. It was the Roberto Duran element that helped them. They haven't improved at all. They can't stop the run. They can't stop the pass. I mean, opposing quarterbacks have thrown, 16 touchdowns on them already? That's five games. That's over three a game. Or six games. What are we at? Six games. Yeah, week seven. I mean, still, it's almost three touchdown passes a game.
And they have,
you know,
Yeah. And they made a move for Landon Collins, who's a linebacker, trying to play safety. I mean, it's just a mess right now.
And they can't get any offense generated with any consistency. They got shut out in the second half by the Chiefs. There's no worse defense than the Chiefs. You got shut out in the second half.
Sheesh. When we come back,
I can't go for that.
No, can do. So I know they're in town. The 3 points are insignificant because they're just going to go money line on Philly coming to Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but
they should.
Wes gave out Philly. When we come back, I want to get Michael's take on that matchup.
Talk about it. Yep.
Coming up next here on the Lombardi Line.
To the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, Brent, thank you. And the NBA betting guide, we're just getting into the season, so plenty of time. $9.99. You get everything. Jonathan Von Tobel and the crew did a great job with this in-depth analysis from the experts. Daily betting tips, all for $9.99. It's the NBA betting guide presented by VSiN, vsin.com/subscribe. For more information and to check it out. I mean, it's $9, $10. Why wouldn't you buy it? Okay. We welcome you back here on the Lombardi Line. Couple three things. That's what it is. So Wes gave out Philly. This number hasn't moved. As you see, Michael, Philly here in Vegas, open three, still sitting three. And so Wes gave out Philly, started off well with your boy Sriracha. I'm just going to call him Sriracha because I love the condiment. The new coach here with Vegas. Before we get to the game, may I ask you, because that was a great performance, but we often see that with a new coach, a little energy in a team there in Denver. Now we know Denver is who they are. Was there a fallout with Gruden with this team? Did Gruden have the support of the team? I know you have information. Provide as much as you can so the better can understand. Will this be a rallying point for this team? Is this going to settle down?
I always thought Gruden was the kind of guy. Now, he never was going to be able to work in college, but I always felt Gruden was a guy that needed graduation. You know, and by that I mean is after 3 or 4 years around Gruden, I think he wears on you. I also think that he puts players in doghouses. I mean, we saw Kenyon Drake come out of nowhere last week. He ran the wheel route on Johnson for the touchdown. He had a big run. You know, that's a lot of money. They guaranteed him $8 million next year, and they were giving him sparing work, but he's a good player. You know, he's a good player, and they kind of integrated him in there. And Greg Olson, the offensive coordinator, was able to get him. So I think that the restrictions and the micromanagement over the offense probably helped the offense a little bit last week. But this week, to me, is a little different story. I think Denver's weakness is in their defensive line. We saw that last night, right? We saw their inability to really put any pressure on Case Keenum, even when the great Von Miller was in the game. The Eagles can put some pressure. Their defensive front, even though they didn't get to Brady, they should be able to win inside against a very bad interior offensive line of the Raiders. And if they can get pressure on Carr and get into his face and cause some problems, you know, then Carr is going to be prone to make mistakes, much like the Bears did. I mean, the Bears win that game because they pressured Carr. They pressured Carr. They were able to run the football. And they ran the ball out of the RPO scheme, which is exactly what fits Philadelphia. When I first looked at the sheets this week, when Monday morning when I came in, I wrote down that I said, okay, this is what I like just off the cuff. you know, just let me look at this and say, okay, here's my here's what I'm thinking of right now. And one of the games I really like was Philly. I like Philly and the points. I like Philly getting the points three, you know. And then when I did my numbers, it's a pick 'em game for me basically with my numbers. And so if I'm going to get the points, I might as well take them.
Yeah, and the Raiders haven't been good in this spot under Gruden. They're 1-5 ATS, their last six as a home favorite. But again, it's a new era. It's new vibes. I don't know if that changes things, but they haven't been good when favored, obviously. So, it, look.
I mean, if they pick up momentum, though, Patrick, then how do you justify the $100 million? How do you justify the 10? There has to be a point of diminishing return.
Do they have to pay him for that? Are they going to pay him for? I'm sorry to interrupt, but are they going to pay him for these 6 years?
I am told this is not. I don't have this confirmed. This is through the grapevine. I'm told that that between he and Mark Davis, they probably reached a settlement. Now I don't know what that means. Did he keep him this? Will he pay him this year and next? I don't know.
Didn't he provide cause?
You know, I don't know what that
didn't
means.
He, like if I'm if Bill AD says you're out, bro, because I did something untoward or that's cause. I don't get paid.
I don't think they can dispute the cause. You know, even though he was not an employee, I think this would be labor law, which is not my expertise. He technically wasn't an employee of the Raiders when these emails. Now, he claims on Real Sports the real story will come out. I don't know what the real story could be because those emails are real. We're losing sight of it. The emails are real. Now, how the NFL got released the emails and all that, that's a whole documentary that I can't get into, nor do I have any expertise on. So that might be the real story comes out. But clearly, this was a targeted case in terms of getting those emails out.
A lot of
that has to do back to the fact that Snyder and the punter are engaged in litigation.
A lot of times, so there's 50-plus guys in a locker room, and you know how the word spreads. It's a fraternity. I say that to set it up this way. Bisaccia, does he have a legit shot to become the head coach? Because if he doesn't, I worry about this team if it starts to go bad. Well, what's the point anyway? They're not auditioning for the head coach.
Right. That's a great point. And I think that, you know, I know when Marty Schottenheimer took over for Sam Ratigliano in 1983 or 84, he basically told Art Modell, I'm not an interim guy. Either you make me the full-time head coach or find somebody else. Because I'm not going to stand in front of this team and tell them that they don't work for me.
Right.
And Modell made them the head coach, and they went 4-4 over the last eight games. So I do think your point is very well taken. I think if it starts to struggle and he doesn't look like he's going to be the head coach, then, you know, do I think Mark Davis would like him to win six in a row and make the playoffs and keep him as a head coach? Yeah, that's the easiest thing to do. Do I think that'll happen? No. I think the liabilities of their defense will eventually show up. And if they play against certain teams offensively against their defense, I think it'll show up.
This is Nick Sirianni. What is the take there in town? It's very much so far a rookie head coach debut.
Well, I think he and Jonathan Gannon, the defensive coordinator, are under intense pressure. I mean, everybody wants him to run the ball more. You know, one of their best players is Miles Sanders. They don't get him the ball. They don't get him the football, and that's a shame. But they're an RPO offense. They're running the Oklahoma Sooner Schooner offense. And, you know, and that is RP, and the key letter here is the O. It's run, pass, option. So even though you might want to run the ball, the option is there to throw it. And I think that's what happens. And then also the quarterback becomes the leading rusher, and he starts to take off with it. So, you know, I think the offense is a little prehistoric. I don't like their offense because of this reason, Patrick. I think the RPO stuff is really kind of waning down by this wayside. I think, you know, the leading rusher in attempts is Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
He's the leading rusher in attempts. Now, he averages 6-7 a carry, but can this sustain itself? You know, they're going to get back Dallas Goedert this week. They get Lane Johnson back this week. You know, so I think they'll have a better chance at being able to move the football a little bit more effectively against a Raider team, which I think they should be able to. I mean, the Chargers, when you look at what the Eagles have played, you know, they've played against defenses like this, and I think they can have some success.
So is this a 17-week audition for Hurts, or does the front office, because it's not Sirianni, does the front office know what they're going to do at the quarterback position, or are they going to wait and see here?
I think it's always been an audition. I think the one thing you can say about Philadelphia is they've never not liked Hurts, but they've never been full bore on Hurts. And that's the right decision. That's the right play. There's no reason to go all in. Hurts has done nothing to show you to go all in. You know, I mean, he's a one look and run guy. And in this game against the Las Vegas Raiders, what you'll see happen is because the Raiders love to run up the field and they love to do arm overs and swim moves and all that, there'll be a lot of area for Hurts to take off and run with the football. He'll be able to slip out of the pocket and go. Now, can the Eagles play good enough defense? You know, they've given up almost 48% on third down. That hasn't been good. They play two soft zones. They play cover two. They play cover two in this game. Jacobs will have a huge day. Jacobs will have a huge day running the football. They can't do that. They're going to have to modify what they do defensively.
The drafting by Mayock and mostly Gruden, because he had final say, has been horrible. But where they did hit is with Ypsilanti's Eastern Michigan's Max Crosby. To be fair, they hit on
him. Yeah, they hit on Crosby. There's no doubt. He's a good player. I mean, you're going to hit on some guys. But look, I was saying this to Ron Wolf the other day. I say, can you imagine that the guy who they light the torch for, the man who represents the franchise, the man who instilled the size, speed, the Raiders, the belief of the organization that they honor with his name on their helmets, they drafted a guy, the fifth pick overall, who didn't even run a 40. They didn't even run a 40. How do you do that? How do you do that? How does somebody in the building say, you know, if I were here, we wouldn't be able to do it? I looked at Ron and I said, Ron, could you imagine if you and I walked into his office and said, let's draft Cleveland Farrell with no 40 time? What do you think he would have done to us?
Kicked you out? Swore at you?
Yeah, of course.
Said
that would have been worse
words.
Than kick you out. Kick you out would have been a blessing.
So his son is
so
now.
So my point here is, there's no, when his son doesn't understand the whole, what it all means. He hears size and speed, but he doesn't know what that all means. And he let Gruden run the team. I mean, Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com, I mean, he wrote a whole piece. It's so easy to write. It was easy to write. Look at the picks. Look at the players. Look at the trades. Nothing was good. You can't deny it. Carr was there before he got there. Poor Reggie McKenzie lost his job. You know, you could say Reggie wasn't a good GM, but most of the good players are on the team came when Reggie was there.
Al is in his grave still drooling over Hayward Bay's 40-yard dash right now. So he would definitely not have drafted Cleveland Farrell.
If he could speak up, he would be mad at a lot of people, particularly his son, for spending $100
million. If he could speak up, it'd be a big story. He'd be the first of all time. All right, when we come back, our buddy Josh Applebaum joins us.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, so you heard Michael talking about those Raven betting splits. You can find them right now at vsin.com, most accurate in the game. New feature gives you insights on where the money and the bets are moving for each game. You're going to be able to see where the public's betting based on the number of tickets. It's all there, the information. Every number has a story. We help you put that story together. Start your next sports bet at vsin.com. Right now, Michael Lombardi. And what are you going to wear tonight to that big function, that secret function?
Oh, it's a casual. It's not a function. It's just, you know, you go have dinner. They have like three seatings, and so it's really kind of cool. It's a back in time place, Patrick.
Like most
places in South Philly, there's the picture of the Pope on the wall, and there's a picture of Sinatra on the wall, and this place has both.
Hey, Michael's going to a super exclusive dinner tonight.
It's called the Plaza Social Club. It's not super exclusive. You just got to get in.
Okay.
I do WIP every Friday morning at 7 a.m. Angelo Cataldi, great, great host, former Inquirer writer.
The Rhea Asian?
Hughes,
but,
and
oh,
Al
Cataldi.
Morgani.
Yeah, Italian. Okay,
Cataldi,
gotcha.
Yeah, Italian guy. And Rhea actually was the one who got me in there. So
you should wear an Al Davis jumpsuit.
I don't think so. That's
May it. I ask you the origin of the jumpsuit?
I have no idea, Patrick. I've never asked that question. I mean, he always dressed perfectly, you know? I mean,
yeah.
He looked always, it was, but no, I have no idea.
Okay.
His son's wearing all white now, too.
His son's, if you notice, yeah. Mark is all white now, too. Al looked like he was headed to Foot Locker to work. Josh Applebaum.
His shoes are always clean.
You should see Josh when he's not working. He sweatsuits up and down as he joins us.
Oh, yeah.
Market Insights is the pod. VSiN.com/podcast for all the shows as we say hi to Josh. Hi, Josh.
Good morning, Patrick. Good morning, Michael. Yeah, great to be with you. And Michael, I thought, you know, you got the Pope, you got, you know, Sinatra, you got to get Tony Soprano, or at least Uncle Junior up there as a photo. I mean, come on, we got to get the trilogy, the trifecta.
In the Italian culture, the sacred, it's sacred to be on the wall. Everybody, I'm sure, would love Tony and Uncle June. But when you're talking sacred, you're really only talking about two things. You're talking about the Pope and you're talking about Sinatra. Those are the only two sacreds. There's no chance anything else is coming on that wall.
Josh, we've got four in college football Friday Night Lights. There's the Bounce House down in Central. How about your boy Uncle Gussie? That is a legit home field. Let's get into that one first. Memphis at Central Florida. This is a fascinating matchup because two teams that have just had wild seasons with Memphis, starting 3-0, 0-3 over the last three. This number opened Central Florida 3, jumped. It's flipped now, Josh, to Memphis lane 2.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Patrick. So let's go to the American Conference tonight. And this one really, you know, kind of exhibits one of the biggest line moves we've seen on the board tonight. So if you look at both these teams, you mentioned it, Patrick, up and down this year. Memphis starts 3-0. They do snap their three-game losing streak. Last week, they beat Navy 35-17, cover the 11. But then you look at UCF. They've really struggled. You know, they've lost three of their last four. No shame in losing to Cincy, really good team. You know, they lose 56-21. Don't cover the 21.5 there. This is kind of what Memphis, you know, kind of maybe getting back in their groove. UCF really falling off here a bit. And really what the market is telling you is it's kind of a bit of a public play to Memphis, but also it looks like a lot of respected money is also hitting Memphis because this line opened UCF as around a 2.5-point favorite at home, completely flipped now to Memphis -2. So this is always that dog to fave line move that always, you know, interests me. Again, it takes respected money to move a number and flip it over the fence. So at this point, guys, you know, a couple advantages for Memphis. Number one, bit of a rest advantage. They played Thursday, whereas you had UCF playing on Saturday on the road. Then also this Memphis offense, they're averaging 36 points a game. They're second in the conference in total offense. So looking at this move, guys, I'd be looking at Memphis and really as a money line play. And again, in these money line spots, I don't like to screw around with a point or 2 points. You win by one, you lose, you win by two, you push. I like to go money line -130, mitigate some risk, but I'm leaning on this Memphis offense and this dog to fave line move. I'd be looking at the Tigers here.
You know, it's funny though, when you look at Memphis, they're, you know, they open up 17-0 against Temple and they lose that game 34-31 and they average 35 points a night, but they're, you know, their relative scoring offense is really where they're low. I mean, they get a bunch of yards, but they don't get the ball in the end zone. You know, they're seventh in the country in yards per play, but yet they should have even more points for what they're able to do. You know, and I think that's the biggest concern. As for Uncle Gussie, you know, we're in the same problem always on with Uncle Gussie. I mean, you know, we're not any good on defense and we can't throw the ball. Other than that, we're great, you know. Other than that, we're great. I mean, we're 64th overall in passing, and Central Florida has never been a run school. They've always been, you know, we gotta throw it. And, you know, they can't stop anybody either. And that's the biggest issue. So I'm with you. I Memphis really disappointed me against Temple. You know, I really felt like that. I would lean towards South, playing at home. I think I'd lean towards the home team here.
And the big one is, remember, you talked about the importance of the quarterback. Dylan Gabriel, when he's playing, they're scoring 42. When he's out, they're scoring 24. I mean, they're Uncle. Yeah. But did you see your boy Uncle Gussie? He was talking about the rumors of him going to LSU. Wait, what?
Oh my! Oh no!
Your boy.
Let's stop that right there. Let's
He's
body
like,
fight
let me
that
refute
one.
These
let's,
right
let's
away.
Nip that one.
And
in the
everybody's
butt.
Like, Gus,
let's body
nobody
fight
asked.
That one.
That's a best. That's a power move though. Right you come there. Out and you're like, I just want to let everybody know I'm not going to LSU, and everybody's like, dude, nobody thought you were.
Yeah. I'm not going to the prom. Well, nobody wants you to go to the prom. You know, right. Like you don't have a date. That's why you're
60.
Not going.
Yeah. Maybe you're chaperoning. So. Anywho, Colorado State, Utah State, Josh, and we'll get to the pros. This number open Colorado State 1.5. I think Colorado State all of a sudden is good at football. No, 1.5. It's up to 3 with Utah State going the other way right now.
You're totally right, Patrick. Colorado State, the Rams taking in some money here again, opening a -1.5 on the road. They're up to -3. You can shop around. You might be able to find a -2.5 right now. Try to get below the key number of 3 there. But this Mountain West matchup, Colorado State 3-3, 4-2 ATS. Utah State 4-2, 3-3 ATS. But you look at Colorado State, they're playing well. They've won 3 of their last 4, as you mentioned, Patrick. Aggies win their last one against UNLV, but they've dropped two of their last three. So really kind of what the market's telling you, slight public play to Colorado State. But again, another example, kind of like that Memphis one, where it's not just a slight majority of bets, but this big load of money coming in, causing this movement toward Colorado State. Now, again, 2.5, maybe three. If it's 2.5, maybe lay the 2.5. If it's up to 3, I know there'd probably be some buyback there, Utah State at 3. This would be another money line play for me, looking around a minus 130 play here with Colorado State. And kind of like what we're banking on the Memphis offense, if you're going to bet Memphis tonight to cover that number for you, you're really banking on Colorado State's defense in this game. They're only giving up 19.5 points for game, Patrick, whereas Utah State's giving up around 30. So you're really hoping this Colorado State defense keeps Utah State in check, score enough to cover that number. Another money line play for me on the Rams in that one.
You know, they give up, Colorado State's defense gives up, they're 11th in the country in yards per play, and relative total defense, they're 8th. I like their defense, and this team should be better than 3-3. They really are. They lose to South Dakota State in the opener, get crushed, give up 42 in that game, come back and lose to a bad Vanderbilt team, 24-21. They play Toledo. We know Toledo's, I know they're 3-4, but still. And then they play Iowa to a 10-point game. They played Iowa as well as anybody up until Purdue beat them last week. So, and then they dominated San Jose State and New Mexico. I do like them in this game.
How about your boy last night here, Legion State? San Jose State in town. They beat up on UNLV. Michael, UNLV's now 0-7. Arroyo hasn't won a football game as a head football coach here at UNLV.
Will he keep his job? Do you think
new? You know what's weird is he's done a good job of promote. He's in a lot of commercials here. He kind of has a vibe about him that is assertive. I think he is popular with the administration, the way he carries himself, but his team is dreadful. I mean, they've been close.
They were out of my bottom 10 because they've been covering way too much. You know, yeah. They've been covering way too much to be in my bottom 10. But, you know, I think to me, when you look at him, I mean, you know, he's supposed to be a really good offensive coach. And I think Justin Herbert is living testimony that they're 117th in the nation on offense. You know, is that good, Patrick?
No,
I don't know. Total offense,
good.
They're 123, you know. I don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, I think the one thing you can't do, if you're going in the wrong direction, you better turn around. I think that's what the UNLV administration needs to decide on. As a former assistant there, that's what I would recommend.
Well, he did the first thing that a lot of small-town coaches do is they get into a car commercial right away. Here's my question for you, Michael. These kids make millions. The $300 lease, you got to go take a day to film because you want to save $300 on a lease a month? What is that? You're right. You get a free car. But
you're getting a free car. Look, it goes back to
coach your team, bro.
Look, right. Put all your energy into one thing. Put all your energy into one thing. Obviously, Coach Ed down at LSU put all his energy into other things, which is why he lost his job. Because if you don't, you will lose your job.
Yeah, those other things, NSFW, Josh Applebaum. Not safe for work. Mm-hmm. although Ed was having a good time, we know this. Let's go NFL, because you want to discuss the Giants here.
Yeah, just a couple of games caught my eye, and I think this is going to be a tough week. It's, for whatever reason, the board feels like these lines are really sharp, and it just a lot of games pop out to you usually. This one, I think, is going to be a little bit harder for better, so be disciplined. But again, you know, if you see an edge, get down. A couple that caught my eyes, guys, the Giants, no one's betting them. They got a lot of injured guys. They're one of the most lopsided plays of the week, almost 9 out of 10 bets on the Panthers. But Panthers open -3. They've stayed -3. Some books are even down to 2.5. You've seen a little move to the Giants. And then also the Eagles guys, Michael, they don't need the points, but you may want to grab the +3 right now. The Eagles are about to go down to 2.5.
Great job, Josh. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks,
good
Josh.
Luck. Good luck, Dirty Water.
Can't wait, guys.
Good luck tonight,
appreciate
man.
It.
Appreciate
Hope
you, Josh.
Hope the season doesn't end tonight,
let's
guys.
Let's hit that Giants game when we come back.
Okay, we shall as we continue on a Friday. Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
All right, King of Sportsbooks right now, BetMGM. Become a weekend warrior, free-to-play challenge. So you just go to BetMGM, you click up in the corner, and you find the contest, the weekend contest, King of the Weekend. It's awesome. You can win $50,000. So you're going to pick the 6 teams you think will score the most points from the selected games, and then $1,000 is going to go to the top entry each week. And if you guess all 6 right in order, you could win the $50,000. Pretty awesome. Plus hundreds of dollars in free bets awarded to players who come close to a perfect score. So you don't have to pick it perfectly to get paid. King of Sportsbook, BetMGM.com, 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue. as we get you back here on a Friday. Michael Lombardi headed to the salon to get that haircut for the big dinner tonight after the show.
No, so no haircut today. No haircut. Okay. No, I got no haircut.
All right.
No haircut. No appointments.
Giants.
I've got. Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, you know, look, the Giants injury list is really hard. You know, it's tough. I mean, it's, you know, no Tony, no Barkley. Their offensive line, Andrew Thomas, is out. And look, the Panthers haven't played well the last 2 weeks. But my question is, you know, how do the Giants block this front? The Panthers are second overall in defense. They really are good. I mean, last week, you know, Minnesota, because of the precision at quarterback and their skill players, moved the ball on them. But to me, this is going to be a challenging game. And I keep going back to this comment that I make all the time. The Giants are just not as good on defense as they've been in the past. You know, not that they were ever great on defense, Patrick. I don't want to imply that. But they're just not as good as they were last year on defense. And it shows up, you know. It shows up in every statistical analysis. I mean, their offense takes almost 19 yards to deliver a point. Their defense only allows 13.6 to give up a point. That 5.3 differential means you're not a good team. Whereas Carolina differential in that category is minus 0.44. They're really close. So I'd have a hard time really putting my chips in on Carolina, because I don't care where the money's flowing. It really doesn't matter to me. I've seen these line movements now for 7 weeks. You know, some work, some don't. Some have relevance, some don't. But I think at the end of the day, it comes down to the matchups. Are the Giants healthy enough to play in this game with their offensive line, with their skill players? Can they run the ball on Carolina? Can they throw it on Carolina? Can they protect Daniel Jones and not have him turn the ball over? I know they were embarrassed last week, and it's easy to assume to say, okay, they're not going to be. I've been on them 3 weeks in a row. I'm 1-2 based on the Giants in two of those 3 weeks. I thought they could cover against the Saints. Didn't think they win. They did. I thought they could cover against the Cowboys. Everybody got hurt. And I thought they were a good play at 9.5. And then it went all the way down to 7.5 last week. And it wasn't a good play at 9.5. It wasn't a good play at 10.5. And you know what, Patrick? It wasn't going to be a good play at 15.5. No. It wasn't a good play, period.
So Jones is nursing a concussion. And then you throw in Barkley questionable, Thomas out protecting him, Galladay questionable, Tony doubtful, Slayton questionable. I mean, this is a mash unit right now for the Giants.
Right, and they average 19 points a game, and they're going against a team that gives up 20 a game, and I think they're going to have a hard time blocking them. Look, what's going to affect this more than anything is the pressure. You know, what's going to affect Daniel Jones from making mistakes? The pressure. And, you know, Matt Rhule turned down the Giants. I think this isn't a personal game for Matt Rhule. He's on a 3-game losing streak. You know, I think he's going to want to go in there and show the Giants he's really a great coach. You know, now Sam Darnold's got to get better. I think what they should do with Sam Darnold is I think they should do exactly what the Bengals do with Joe Burrow. I think what Sean McVay did with Jared Goff is get him to the line of scrimmage. Let the defense declare what they're in. Talk to them on the headset till 15 seconds and get them in the right play.
But this is a terrible. I think the Panthers right now, it's a team that thrives on chaos defensively. They 16 sacks. They blitz on more than 30% of their plays. I mean, they're just going to throw the kitchen sink at Daniel Jones. They know how beat up this team is.
They do, and they're a wounded duck, and they've got to take advantage of it. You know, and, you know, the Panthers aren't exactly healthy, but the injury report for this Giant team is not impressive. You know, without Tony, without Barkley, their running back, without their offensive line, you know, their two tackles are going to be very – their corner situation is bad. What has to happen here, Robbie Anderson, the Panthers gave him a lot of money this offseason or during the season in the summer. You know, he's had 40 targets. I think he's got 15 catches. He's been this one of the big things when you watch Panther tape that's been most disappointing is the lack of production from Robbie Anderson, catching the ball, making plays. They don't have McCaffrey. I get that. He's the straw that stirs the drink. But Robbie Anderson could take some of the pressure off of DJ Moore. Terrence Marshall does. Robbie Anderson has let him down. Do they have anybody on this team in New York that can cover Robbie Anderson? I don't think so.
I got a silver lining for you. You want some good news on a Friday?
I love it, Patrick. I'm in such a good, I mean, it's such a good day. Why not?
Coach Garrett's still going to be there.
Sure, he's going to be there.
That's good news.
And he's going to have to try to. It's good news. He's going to have to try to figure out how to move the football.
Yeah,
you know, they can't run the ball. They can't run it. You know, I mean, and look, the Giants are. They've won. I think it's 18 games in the last 5 years. You know, this is not a team that has been very good for the last 5 years. Like, you know, I know Joe Judge said, look, the fish is
a stinky fish.
Head down,
yeah,
right?
It's a stinky fish.
It's a stinky fish. But, I mean, let's be real honest here. They're not very good. And they're 0-3 against the spread at home.
Well,
how about that?
How about the Panthers, 8-1 ATS, their last 9 road games? This is, you mentioned, it's 2.5 opener, up the 3. I think what you said a bit back is so huge. I think Rule has a point to prove against the Giants as well.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, and nobody, and Josh says nobody's betting the Giants, but on my board, they've got 58% of the money. They've got 24% of the tickets. They got 50% of the money. Like, I think what's happening here is the line's moving to Carolina. It's not moving to the Giants. You know, it's the money's all on the Giants. 58% of the money's on the Giants.
I have a question for you. Tepper is a very aggressive New York kind of dude. You know this. Could the Panthers potentially be in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes?
You know, I was told early on they were, then they weren't. Now, I don't know if that's changed based on the play of Darnold. You know, Darnold's 3 good games, his 3 bad games. In fairness to Darnold, you know, everybody's hard on Darnold, and I am too. But, I mean, without McCaffrey, the Panthers team is really not the same. I mean, the two significant signings of the Panthers, Robbie Anderson and McCaffrey, they're not on the offense. Anderson's there. He's not playing good.
Right.
And McCaffrey's hurt. And that affects the other players around him. Plus, they've got to play from in front. They've got to play from in front. That helps Darnold much improve. It takes some pressure off him. Plus, I think they've got to be able to utilize his get him in the offense and take advantage of a Giant defensive front that has not been very good.
We've got a 2.5 here. That might be stale. I don't know, Matt. Check that and see if that's, because I see 3s everywhere. If there's a 2.5 here, I'm going to bet it because that number is headed to 3, and it's 2.5 here. Well, I'm going to bet it after the show. Okay, Panthers 2.5 at the Giants.
I mean, the reason it's coming down is because the money, people are betting the Giants. This isn't a reverse line movement based on, Josh is right. 76% of the tickets are on the Panthers. They only have 42% of the money.
Hey,
Giants have that dynamic that I like, which is low ticket count, high money.
So Joe Judge said the fish is stinky from the head down, which is basically he's the head of the fish. Michael, do you like to fish?
No.
Okay.
You strike me
as an outdoorsman.
I mean, I grew up in a beach town. I have no interest in fishing. I get seasick if I go out past the island. You know, I could stay in the back bay, but after that, I mean, you know, no.
Just curious.
I can't go for that.
No can
That's
do.
That's a John Oates thing for me.
No can do. All right, so big Friday plan for you.
Yeah.
Super secret.
How about you?
Dinner.
What are you up to? We got tomorrow morning. We got some really good college games. I'm excited about tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know,
of course. You're going to be out at the Borgata tomorrow morning?
I will be there with my man Thomas Gable. We'll be able to go over some of these games. We'll see what's going on.
They're going to take care of parking for you?
You know, I was surprised last night. Arkansas State played Louisiana as tight as they did. Wow. What a game.
Maybe get a complimentary coffee tomorrow.
I will. I usually go downstairs to get the Italian coffee. It's really good there. Really good.
Save the receipt.
Thank you.
I don't know. I'm in a goofy mood. All right, man. Well, listen, enjoy your Friday. Quickly want to ask you on the way out, just because I know you have a vibe on the program. Washington's catching 17.5 tonight, hosting Washington. Would you go either? Excuse me. Arizona's catching 17.5 at home, Washington in town. Would you go either way?
I think Arizona's a wounded duck. They really are beat up.
So stay
really
off of it. Stay away.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. You and Berman have a great night. I'll see you tomorrow morning right here on
Thanks,
the Lombardi
Patrick.
Line.
Thank you, Matt Santos. Enjoy your weekend, Matt Santos. We'll miss you.
Okay, there he is. That's Michael Lombardi. This is the Lombardi Line. Odds on coming up next.